Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to The Best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
Let's get right to it, Rob. We have the sound of last night's controversial call in the L.A. Dodgers 2-1 win over the San Francisco Giants. Here it is.
0-2. Scherzer to Flores. Just outside. He went around. Strike three. Gabe Morales, the first base umpire. The Dodgers are going to the National League Championship Series.
That was Dodgers radio, Robbie. Even he didn't believe it. You could
that
tell.
Call tells you all you need to know.
Right.
And that you would be like, if you were a Dodger announcer, you could have been a homer and been like, he went. That's it. You know what I mean?
Right.
He even didn't. He said it's a bit outside. He didn't even insinuate or even give you the idea that he went around. And Chris, it was a great game. It takes away from, because you don't want it to end that way, where the talk was about the controversial check
because
swing.
Because it is, unfortunately. Because
it is. That's all everybody talked about today, rather than the Dodgers winning 2-1 in a really gut check kind of series and game and the edge of your seat. You knew somebody was going to be heartbroken because it was close. It's different if somebody blows somebody out and you know early you're going to lose. Nobody knew what was going to happen, right? Until the very, very end.
Absolutely, man. Edge of your seat. And I'm going to give credit to a few people. Dodgers outfielder,
you know who
the
that
great
was,
Mookie
though.
Betts.
That was Charlie Steiner, you know, who does the Dodger game.
Right.
Chris,
right,
yeah,
right,
that's Charlie
right,
Steiner.
Right. But Mookie Betts, who had a tremendous game, 4-for-4, stolen base, and the run, or one run for the Dodgers.
Right, he scored the first run, right? Yeah.
Here's his quote on the call. I didn't think he went, but I'm not the one who makes the decisions. It is what it is. I give Mookie credit for being honest, because I don't think he went either.
I think
it was obvious that he didn't go.
Do you remember the famous Michael Jordan one, where Michael Jordan, I think it's when he came back, Chris, it was some playoff series where he fouled a guy. He pushed a guy, and they didn't call it. And Michael Jordan said the same exact thing. Like, I fouled him. I don't know what you want me to do. I fouled him. They didn't call it. You know what I mean?
Like, is it my fault? Like,
right. And Mookie Betts is being out. I don't think he went. I don't think anybody on the field thought he went. I don't think Max Scherzer thought he went. Obviously, Charlie Steiner, the broadcaster, didn't think he went. And this
check
is what happens.
Swings, and the official said this, the umpire or the referee. Check swings are definitely hard to call. But I don't think that one was particularly hard.
No. That to me was obvious.
Yeah, that was obvious. Now, Gabe Kapler, the Giants manager, I give him credit too. He said it's super tough. Obviously, you don't want a game to end that way. There's no guarantee of success in that at bat, but it's just a tough way to end it. I give him credit because he could have ranted and raved, and he would have been within his rights, Rob, to rant and rave about we got robbed, this and that. It was unfair. This is unbelievable. The league wanted the Dodgers. They're the big, you know, the big team.
They could have made that statement.
They got the stars. So I give him credit for, you know, being a showing sportsmanship. Let's put it that way.
And I'll say this, because I'm with you. Because it was more like the Giants went 2-for-90 with runners in scoring position. Chris, they had guys on base.
Yep.
The first two innings when the Dodgers were using their relievers instead of their
stuff. They were very fortunate to
get
out of that with no runs.
They were fortunate. You saw that.
They were tagging them.
They were tagging them, hitting balls off the wall. They just couldn't get a big clutch hit. But they easily could have been up 2-0 or 3-0 in those first two innings. They had guys on base.
Right.
They, at one point, and I'm exaggerating, 2-for-90, but at one point I remember seeing the graphic. It said they were 2-for-25 with runners in scoring position.
Unbelievable.
You got to get, you gotta get a couple
Kaplan
of hits.
And I think knew that. I think that probably played a little role in his comment. And, Rob, one thing I didn't like hearing today – oh, Flores probably would have struck out. Or
nah.
We don't know.
You don't know
how
that.
How many times do you see a guy you don't expect? How about Bellinger?
Yep.
Who was having a bad year? He's been the hero
all year. All year.
He's been the hero of the postseason for them. So, I you don't know. This dude might have homered. He might have singled in the run. Like, who knows what he would have done?
He could have hit a double and tied the game. So, do you know what I mean? He could have doubled. You don't have to even hit a home. He could have doubled. Yep. Somebody could have misplayed a ball and Mookie Betts lost it in the lights. You just don't know if you make contact. So for people to say, oh, he's going to strike out anyway, I don't know about that.
You can't
I think that
there.
That's wrong.
And I think you got to let it be decided on the field.
Didn't he have two hits? He had one or two hits in the game. I know he had been hitting for them. So I don't believe in that either, that you're going to forecast he was going to strike out anyway.
I think what you need to do, Rob, and nobody wants to see balls and strikes replayed, but I think there should be, I don't know what to call it, common sense clause, whatever. Like, give your officials in New York jurisdiction to use common sense. If at the end of the game, the last few innings, if you want to say 7, 8, 9, whatever, that if there's a play that deserves to be replayed or reviewed, that they have the jurisdiction in New York to say, let's review this. Because I do get what the referee was saying, Morales. Yeah, that he said it's the toughest call on the field. And he thought he went, but he didn't get to see the replays like we did, right?
Right. But
so
most,
I get it in real time. So I think you should – I just think you need to make a law. It's common sense. Just let them – we're not going to be replaying every call. But
no,
let
we'll
it be –
because we'll be there
right.
all night.
We'll be there all
we'll
night.
There
you
all
don't want
night.
Balls and strikes.
No.
But something here, like that, come on.
I get that. And it has to be like this, Chris, where you watch it, not replay it like 40 times to make a call. So you have to watch it on video, right? And then make the call. If it's got to be...
Well, I wouldn't say you can only watch
it once. No, I'm going to tell you why, because we see this all the time. They do it with stolen bases. Guy steals second base, the fielder holds the glove on him, Chris, and then he comes up for a millisecond off the base,
right,
and
right.
They call him out. That's not what that's for.
That shouldn't even be right.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like it shouldn't be because
think they should outlaw that rule anyway.
They should.
When your momentum carries you off the base, you got there.
You got there before the tag, and he keeps the tag on you, and they call people out and say, look, his spike was off the off the bag like a milli.
Your momentum takes you off the bag to a degree. I just think the answer to that, Rob, is getting rid of that rule because that's ridiculous.
I hate
said,
to
it's
see
totally
that,
against
right.
the spirit of the game. But I just think I don't know. I wouldn't want to limit it to one look because you just want to get it right.
I don't want it to be there for 20 minutes. Is what I'm saying. Like that's the biggest problem I have with replay is that it should be obvious. And Chris, if it's not obvious when you look at it. It's not obvious. His foot was off the bag. It's obvious. And you just, boom. You don't need to watch it 10 times. If it should be an obvious play.
But sometimes stuff is close.
No, I get it. And I'm not saying what I mean by that.
This wasn't particularly close. But
I just think that this was a blown call. And it's a shame because I do think it took away from the game. And that's disappointing that the focus was on a check swing after we saw a classic nine-inning thriller, 2-1, changes, guys on base, clutch moments. You know, like there was a lot of spots in that game.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Beyer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Rob, we watched last night's game. Half of it was on while we were doing the show. Tampa Bay 28, Philadelphia 22. You finally came over from the dark side.
No, I was trying to make some shekels.
Tom Brady.
I needed shekels so I could pay for my trip to Vegas, but it ain't work out. So now I'm going to have to borrow some money from you.
Unbelievable. There's a part of me that just feels like, had you not put money on Tom Brady throwing three touchdowns or more, I think he would have probably thrown four. But with you putting money on it, it just couldn't happen. And so after two touchdowns early, I think in the
His first two possessions, he got touchdowns.
Yeah, they just rolled over Philly. It looked like he was going to have, you know, two in each half. And wasn't meant to be.
No, they did. He did it deliberately to punish me. Tom Brady, somebody gave him the clue to.
He got a text.
Yeah, somebody text him during the game.
Hey, I'm listening to the iCouple.
Yeah, Rob Parker, can you believe that? That Bacha Galoop, he bet on you. He bet on you. You need another touchdown to help him out.
He said, I'm going to help out Lenny. Lenny Fournette's going to get these touchdowns.
Nah, that ain't right. Forward.
But anyway, Rob, Tom Brady, despite what was a good game last night, good game, not a great game.
Not a great game at all. Yeah, just good.
Good game. I mean, not bad. He almost had 300 yards, but, you know, it wasn't spectacular. Rob, the thing is, and this is not just with Brady. I think Pat Mahomes is in this lane. It's somewhat Lamar, somewhat. You know, these are guys, Aaron Rodgers, where, Rob, when they don't throw for big yards, and Rodgers isn't throwing for a ton of yards this year, but he's still having very good games. But when these guys don't hit 300 and have three TDs, it's like we're surprised. Because guys are throwing it so much and putting up such prolific numbers that that's just the way it is. But anyway, yeah, Brady has a big...
But you're right about that. It's just that the numbers are so big all the time now.
Right.
That if you don't get that, you're like, what? He only threw for 240 or two?
Right.
I just gave you Dak a couple of games ago. He got 188. You wouldn't think that Dak Prescott would have 188 yards in a game, Chris. That sounds like nothing.
Right. So, but Brady, Rob, despite last night not being a spectacular game, is having a spectacular season. He leads the league in yards per game. 344 yards per game, leads the league in touchdowns. That'll certainly, well, we would think that would change. He's got one game over everybody else. Mahomes is behind him with 16. He'll probably pass him this weekend. But he's got 17 touchdowns, was one behind Mahomes entering last night. Only three interceptions. And, Rob, Tom Brady at the age of 44 is on pace to shatter Peyton Manning's record for passing yards in a season. The record for a 16-game season is 5,477. Now, we get it. With 17 games, that gives these guys an advantage.
Yeah, Brady, that's not the same record, right?
Right, but that's here's the thing. Brady is on pace to darn near shatter Manning's record in 16 games. He's on pace to throw for 5,654 yards in 16 games. So that would be almost 200 yards more than Peyton Manning threw for. And over 17 games, Rob, Brady's on track. We'll see if it happens to become the first 6,000-yard passer in NFL history. He's got 17 touchdowns. Like I said, leading the league right now. Probably be second in the league by the end of the weekend. Leads the league going into last night's game, Rob. So this is without the extra game. Leads the NFL in attempts, completions, and as I said, yards. Some people, Rob, are arguing, are saying that not only is this the best season that Tom Brady's ever had, but when you factor in the age and the stats, it is the best season any quarterback's ever had. What are your thoughts?
I don't buy into that. I think that, first of all, it's a different game. The quarterback is protected. I think that even Brady has talked about it. It's totally different for defensive players. And the game has just changed. And Brady has all these weapons around him. This is not a normal team. So it's like an old-timers, you know, former stars who had their problems and went somewhere else or retired or came back. Leonard Fournette was a star in Jacksonville, and AB was en route to being.
Nobody wanted those guys, right?
No, I know, but they had other issues. That's all I'm saying. It's not that they couldn't play. They just had issues. So he's on pace for that through, what is it, six games? How many games?
Six games.
Yeah. We'll see how it holds up. I'm not so sure it'll hold up all the way, but
it's gonna be hard. I would be surprised if he averages 344 yards.
Yeah, I just don't see that continuing. There'll be some better teams that they'll play, Chris, as you go forward.
Only a couple.
But I'm just saying, but that could be the difference in whether or not you break the record or not. Right now, they've had their way with most of the teams that they played. I don't know. Can you give me their schedule?
Well, they've played the toughest part of their schedule.
Did they?
Dallas. I'll get it for you in a moment. The Rams. We looked at that in the preseason, and it was clear. Oh, the toughest part of Tampa Bay's schedule is at the beginning. Right, they got light work. They may stumble and fall here or there, but they got light work coming up. They've played the Cowboys. They played the Rams. So. Now they got the Bears, the Saints, the Washington football team, the Giants, the Colts, the Falcons. That week 13, they got the Bills. Up until then, you heard it. It's a bunch of
also-rans. They should win those games, right.
Right, and then they got the Saints again, the Panthers, the Jets, and the Panthers. They could lose one or two games this year. That's not out of the question. And I'm not going to go to best season ever. It's probably too early to say that, Rob. Six games. I mean, let's see.
But we saw last year, and I don't know, what was Russell Wilson last year, Chris?
He was good. He was good.
No, but he was the MVP in the first 5 or 6 weeks.
Right.
Rob G, just give us the numbers on what he was lighting it up.
Yeah, as great as Russell Wilson is, Tom Brady's just different from
Russell. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just talking about his numbers where he was at that time. And if you looked at it, and he wound up not even getting an MVP vote. I'm just saying,
the numbers.
It's weird. You got him?
So through seven games last season, remember he trademarked Let Russ Cook after this instance. 2,151 yards, 71% completion, 26 touchdowns, 6 picks, and his team was 6-1.
Right. They were. That's all I'm saying is, right. And did he get an MVP vote? He didn't even get an MVP vote. Am I right?
No, he did not.
Yeah.
What I'll say about Brady, because a lot of people would argue it's his best season. And statistically, it looks like it certainly could be. But, Rob, I'm going to say this, and obviously I like Tom Brady, but I don't even think Brady's as good as he used to be. Now, let me explain this. He's playing great football. But I said, Rob, in his last year in New England, when they were 12-4, and that was impressive with that team. But I said he can no longer – he's still a good quarterback. But he can no longer carry mediocre wide receivers or mediocre skill position players to Super Bowls or close, which is what he's did for the bulk of his career. But for the years he had Randy Moss, it was just a line of pretty good receivers that he had. Rishay Caldwell, Julian Edelman, Deion Branch, Troy Brown, Wes Welker. Welker and Julian Edelman, they put up numbers, but they didn't do it anywhere else. Welker wasn't even very good before he got to New England. But Brady could carry guys like that. And I didn't think he could when he left New England. And I don't think he thought he could either. But he goes, like you said, he is now in a situation, and I'm not taking credit away from him, because with those, a lot of those same guys, they were 7-9 before him. So he gets credit. He is placing that football and throwing it downfield and spreading the wealth, because A.B., Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin are all eating. All of them. They all are within like 3-4 receptions of each other. And all got about the same amount of touchdowns. Like, it's amazing how he's keeping everybody happy, not to mention his tight ends and running backs. So he's doing a great job. But my point is this. I don't think if he didn't have that talent, I don't think he'd be doing this. I don't think he'd be doing close to this because, again, he can't carry. And it's no shame. A lot of most quarterbacks can't carry mediocre talent, but so far. But I think he's in a better offense than he's ever been. Ever been. And he's got better weapons than he's ever had. Yes, he had Randy Moss, but I'm talking about the full complement. He's never had this type of depth. Unbelievable.
What's funny is Jameis Winston led the league in yards the year before, you know, that year before when he had the 30 touchdowns and 30 picks. So their offense is about this. Like Jameis, you just said it. They were 7-9. He led the league in passing yards. So I think that Bruce Arians and Arians and that offense and the way that they run their offense and they throw the ball a lot, you know, is part of the game plan. You know what I mean? For organization.
I love the offense. I love watching them because it's so airborne. And they got such great receivers. And Rob,
you remember the old Chargers, Don Air Coryell.
Yep.
You remember the
Dan
coach?
Fouts and those guys.
That was his name,
Jefferson,
Don Air.
Charlie Joyner.
Yep. They had unbelievable receiving crew.
Right.
And that's when they were throwing the ball. And in the NFL, they were running the ball. And the Chargers were the only team throwing the ball like that.
Right. I just think that Brady is having a terrific year. He's my preseason pick for the MVP, and he's right there near the top at this point. But I want to wait and see before I say best season ever.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Well, our next guest writes for the New York Times. He's an NFL reporter.
Yes.
And he's been turning the league upside down. So, Ken Belson, we welcome you, brother. I used to write for the New York Times. Covered the Nets, the Knicks, and the NBA for him. So it is great.
Look at Chris
to have
putting
a
out his credentials. Well, I work for the New York Daily News, and I covered the Nets and the Knicks.
Well, yeah, it's not the same, Rob. You know that.
What?
No, Ken, welcome. We like
What's
to have fun, man.
Ken?
You've been doing outstanding work.
Thank you.
And I don't even know where to begin, but do you think we're just at the tip of the iceberg? Or maybe a little beyond that, you know, is more going to be coming out that really is damaging the people?
Well, 650,000 emails, so do the math. I mean, figure right. that 80, 90% of it is boring and, you know, ho-hum yep. stuff. But even if 1% out of 650,000, that's still a lot of emails. So, you know, obviously people are going to do their best to protect them, but you know, a lot of damaging materials already come out, and you know, every reporter on the earth is trying to look for these things. So, I wouldn't be surprised if more stuff does come out.
Ken, how shocking was it? I mean, we know. Was it more shocking of the language that John Gruden used, or the terms to talk about people, or was it more shocking that this guy would actually write that in a work email to somebody? Like, which one was it, the language itself or the stupidity of putting it in like a work email?
Well, to the second point first, absolutely. I mean, we'd know none of this if Bruce Allen hadn't been using his team account. If everybody on that email chain was just using Yahoo or Gmail
right.
or whatever, none of this would be there. So that's a separate question about the state of mind of or the technical savvy of Bruce Allen. But the second part is, it's pretty repulsive stuff. I mean, somebody in Twitter said it was locker room talk. No, it's beyond that.
Thank you.
You're talking about grown men Gruden is in his 50s. Bruce Allen's older. The other gentlemen are, some of them are older, some are younger. But it's beyond that, right? I mean, this is, you couldn't even say teenagers would say a lot of this stuff. It was hateful, and it spanned a lot of different groups. And so when that first email came out last Friday, just focused on D'Amora Smith, as bad as that was, you know, I mean, my sense was this is a pattern. People don't just talk about this way once. And in fact, that's what I found. You know, this kind of language was used over and over and over over many years.
Help me with this, because there were some of his workmates who tried to come to his defense. But Adam Schefter stuff, the stuff that came out with him where he's turning over his copy to his source for him to edit and call them Mr. Editor. And we all went to J school and you know, worked for newspapers or whatnot. And people tried to make excuses. And then to his credit, he did come out with a statement saying that, you know, he's never done it and he made a mistake and looking back on it. How surprised were you that that goes on where people are turning over their work to sources?
I'm a little surprised. I mean, I don't know Adam well. I've had a few interactions with him. But, right. You know, he came up through the newspapers in Denver and other places. It's not like he just got plopped down at ESPN. You know, he knew how it worked. He worked in newspapers before, so he should have known. And I don't know whether, you know, when you get to a broadcast partner, you somehow feel more comfortable with your sources because you're one step, you know, removed from the league itself.
Right, absolutely. They're partners,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, they're partners, and he in particular, you know, I mean, his skill, if you want to call it that, is playing all sides, right? He works with GMs and so, agents and whatever, but yeah, I mean, that's just a cardinal rule, right, in journalism. You don't hand over the story to the source.
That's called a press release, right? Isn't that called a press release?
Yep. So I was a little surprised, Adam in particular, but as I said, I don't know him well enough, and he did apologize for it, which I... You know, which is noble of him, I guess.
Yeah, the other stuff, the stuff that came out today, the relationship between the NFL's general counsel, Jeff Pasch, and Bruce Allen, and some of the stuff that they, you know, the emails that went back and forth between them. One, Pasch rescinds a $15,000 fine that Allen and the Washington football team was supposed to pay. In another, they joked about
Hispanic,
you know, not, yeah, like a Latino song or a song that, you know, from that culture wouldn't be as popular once the wall gets built. What do you think the ramifications of these emails will be?
It's a good question. The league, when I approached them to tell them I was writing the story, within, I don't know, an hour or so, had sent me quotes of support from three owners, including John Mara of the Giants, who's a prominent owner. So that was their way of saying that Pasch is still a very valued employee. He's obviously been there many years, 25 years at this point. So I don't think he's going anywhere. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I think the one thing I do understand, and you guys do too because you've been around the sports world, you know, the league is a complicated place, and right. A guy in Jeff Pasch's position isn't just doing discipline, right? He's working with the teams on commercial deals and marketing and sponsorships and all sorts of areas. So, you know, being a disciplinarian is only one part of his job. And so it is worth, you know, understanding that even though his role as a disciplinarian is under question here, he wears many hats, and so he has many places and ways in which he interacts with the team. But the feeling from the emails that I read, and there were quite a few of them, was that he was uncommonly friendly. I mean, their wives were dining together, and they were spending a lot of time. He flew on the team plane, and league officials do, but it was a lot chummier than you would expect from somebody who's expected to also hold the team account.
Right.
Or accountable, I should say.
Yes. Do the lawyers for the 40 employees from the Washington football team who are pushing to try to get a release of all the emails, because basically their case is nothing really happened. Nothing really happened to Daniel Snyder. You got a $10 million fine, but you know, there's no report. Do they have a leg to stand on to say, wait a minute, we want to see these emails, and maybe there's more, and maybe we have a stronger case, and they're, you know, they're covering up some of the stuff that's really in these?
Well, you're almost answering your question, right? So if that's what they're digging for, I mean, what are the odds that any of this gets released? I will point you to an AP story.
But could they sue anywhere? Is there, that's what I'm asking, Ken.
Like, yeah,
could they go to court and get a judge to get them released, or no?
I'm not a lawyer. I don't know enough about that data. Anything. What I will say is that the AP ran a story quoting or suggesting that the league says there's really nothing else to see here, which, you know, again, where your journalist instincts, you know, please move along. You're only inviting people to look further, I think.
Well, Ken, one thing I didn't like is that the league told the Washington football team when they were doing their investigation, just give us oral reports.
Right.
That makes absolutely no sense. The only explanation to that for me is that they really didn't want to find out. They didn't want to do an in-depth investigation and find out negative things.
Well, or you don't want a paper trail. And, you know, back in 2015, after Deflategate, there have been other episodes where the league actually released a long, lengthy report that detailed it. I mean, it's a journalist's dream, right? You can read through and quote stuff and whatever. And in this case, you know, runs to the heart of an owner's team and a lot of obviously very embarrassing behavior and reprehensible behavior. There's no report. They suddenly don't want to see a printed word on a page. They'll just take a briefing, which, of course, we're not privy to, and then hold a press conference. And there were many, many questions on that press conference on July 1st. Like, why suddenly do you just want to hear about it and not read it and have any documentation? Which is a little odd when the stakes are so high, and as you said, 40 women have accused the team of terrible behavior. So
absolutely. There's no reason for it. Well, Chris, I do want to say that this past June I spoke to Ken's class. At the New York Times, like they have, Ken, tell us what the program is real quick. But it was very enjoyable. It was kids. I got to speak to them about my career and about sports writing. And it's a great program they have at the New York Times.
Yeah, thank you. There are summer courses, 2-week summer courses for high school kids. They're from all over the world and certainly all over the country. And Harvey Arrington are all of our mutual friends. He and I taught the class, or have taught it for several summers now, and this year was online. We were really lucky to have Rob in class. And then if I remember correctly, I think you went to Citi Field after that to catch up on your Mets. My condolences. I'm a Mets fan too,
it was an ugly year for the Mets, no doubt. I mean, that thing fell apart. I was at the game. Ken, when they did the thumbs down, I was there with my godson and his father, and I was there, and I thought he was pointing at me saying thumbs down. You know, I was in the crowd. So that was pretty ugly. But, man, thanks again. I appreciate the invite. That was awesome.
Yeah, and Ken, great stuff, man.
Yeah, keep doing that good work, man.
Keep it up, man. We've been enjoying it.
Okay, good stuff. It's great to catch up with you.
All right, Ken.
All right, see you.